Hello, this is again Zetai TV from Poland, and I'm Emnika Chojecka, and I have a privilege to have special guests in our TV, two brave, amazing women. It's Marzia Amirizadeh and Mariam Rostampour, the Christians from Iran. Great to have you in our TV.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a great opportunity to talk about Christianity and about Iran. I got to know about you from your book, Captive in Iran. It's published in Polish also, and I do recommend this book. I got it from my uncle, and when I was reading this book, the dream to talk to you in person or via Skype, you know, it was very, very my dream to talk to you. And your story is about conversion from Islam to Christianity. And for that reason, the Iranian government put you in jail. It was in March 2009. I want to ask about the situation of Christians and Christianity in Iran, because some of Polish Catholic politicians or journalists say that the situation of Christianity and Christian persecution in Iran is not so bad, and there are Christian churches, and Poland should cooperate with the Iranian regime because it is in the interest of Poland. What do you respond, and what do you say about the real situation of Christians in Iran?
Well, you said it. You know, you mentioned that politicians prefer not to talk about persecution of Christians because of their own interests, because other interests are involved. But I think we all know that situation of Christians in Iran is getting only worse. You know, we were in prison in 2009, and we were, I believe, the first women who went to prison as Christians. But before us, there were also Armenian and Assyrian pastors who were in prison, and also two of them got murdered by the regime in Iran. And since then, you know, since 2009, when we went to prison, our charge was apostasy and blasphemy, and they were supposed to execute us by hanging, but because of the international pressures, they couldn't do it. But since then, they increased pressures on Christians because Christianity is growing in Iran, and Christianity is a threat to the Islamic regime in Iran. That's why they are afraid of the growth of Christianity, and they increase their pressure on Christians, and they increased, suffering Christians and their families. There are hundreds of Christians who are in prison. Some of them, you hear about them in the news because their cases are known. They have people outside Iran. But we believe that there are so many others whom we don't hear about in the news because they don't have families or friends to talk about their imprisonment or their persecution inside Iran. But the truth is that the persecution is growing, and the regime has increased its pressures on Christians and their families.
And, you know, we both believe that our persecution is helping, despite, you know, the regime torturing people, arresting a lot of Christians. But praise God, we can see that many people are coming to Christ. And God is opening the eyes of people, and they are seeing the real face of Islam, the real face of this regime, which is very helpful. And but as Mariam mentioned, you know, many people are suffering because of their faith. It's not just Christianity. Other minorities also are suffering because of their faith. And this government arrested many minorities. They put them in prison. They will lose their benefits. They will lose their job. They refuse to enroll minorities in a school. And there are many threats to the minorities in Iran. As you mentioned, you know, politicians are more, they usually care about their interests. But we believe that politicians should consider human rights violations in Iran. They should respect Iranian people who are fighting for their freedoms these days. And they shouldn't ignore humanity. because people of Iran for over 40 years were under such a cruel regime. They were fighting for their freedoms. And as you know, just in November, the government killed over 1,500 of people. And also they, by shooting the airplane, you know, they killed 178 people. And people of Iran, they are paying the cost of, you know, fighting for their freedom. That's why they need European countries and other politicians like the United States. We are very glad that the new administration is standing with Iranian people for fighting for their freedom. We expect, you know, other European countries to stand with the Iranian people and not bury the human rights, you know, under negotiations, under their interests.
You think that is it possible to overthrow the Islamic regime in Iran? Because, as you mentioned, there are protesters. The people of Iran are demonstrating against the Islamic Ayatollah regime, but they are killed by the government, by the police, and it is very bad situation in Iran now. Is it possible to overthrow the regime?
Of course, it is possible to overthrow the regime because this is the willing of a majority of Iranian people, despite the Western media that they try to show that, you know, majority of Iranian people supporting this regime. This is a lie. And we know that majority of Iranian, you know, are against this regime. They are tired of this brutal regime, and they want regime change. They want, you know, to end this Islamic Republic. That's why, you know, it's possible. People of Iran are fighting for their freedom. They don't need, you know, other countries to come and to interfere to fight for them. They will fight for their own freedom, but they need, you know, other countries, as I mentioned, to stand with them, to support them, like the United States. I remember in 2009, we were in prison, that people were in the street during the Green Movement. They were chanting, you know, Obama, are you with us or with them? At that time, President Obama didn't stand with the Iranian people. Instead of empowering Iranian people, he empowered the regime by making a negotiation deal, you know, with the Iranian regime and giving thousands of, you know, money to the Iranian government. We expect, you know, European countries and politicians to stand, to respect human rights, to respect Iranian people who are fighting for their freedom, because Iranian people would not forget those who betrayed them, those who didn't stand with them.
And also, I think, you know, as Marzia mentioned, people in Iran these days are fighting for their rights, and they are paying the price. As you mentioned, you know, hundreds of people, thousands of people are either getting arrested or getting killed by the government. But it is very important especially for the media in the West to stand with the Iranian people, because wrong narratives and the narratives that the media in the West tries to show, you know, can distract people, can distract regular people in the West, because we have friends who ask us, what is going on in Iran? Is this true that, for example, this media outlet tries to show that, you know, the majority of people support the regime? And we can see that the media can have a great influence on shaping people's minds. That's why we believe it's very important for the media in the West to stand with the Iranian people and try to show the truth, not to spread lies and spread regime's propaganda. Because one example is when, you know, General Soleimani, who we believe was a terrorist, was killed in Iraq. The Iranian regime tried to show that the majority of Iranian loved Soleimani and supported him, and for them it was a hero. They tried to bring people into streets. Actually, the truth is that they forced people to come to streets, because we know this regime. You know, for many years we lived in Iran and we know their tactics. They try to, you know, bus children from school to bring them into the street to show that there are many people in the street supporting the regime and supporting, you know, General Soleimani. In some cases, they try to direct traffic and to close subways, to close streets. again, to direct traffic into the you know, place of protest to show that there were many people supporting General Soleimani. But the truth that we don't see in the media and in the West is that majority of Iranians started celebrating the deaths of Soleimani because, you know, Soleimani was not just a terrorist who was killing people outside Iran. Soleimani was behind order of killings of thousands of Iranians inside Iran. And we have seen videos inside Iran that people were, you know, spreading cookies. They were giving cookies to each other. They were celebrating. They were dancing. And they are very happy that he's gone from the face of the earth. And unfortunately, we don't see the truth in the media, especially in the West.
And our TV, we were showing this picture, this video of Iranian people celebrating after Soleimani's death, and we support your revolution. The hashtag Free Iran. We organize support in Poland for Free Iran. So we are with you and inform Poland and the Europe about the true heroes of Iran. Let's get back to your story, to your book. You were put in one of the most severe prison, or maybe the most severe prison in Iran, the prison Evin, for 9 months. And could you tell us what was the worst thing in this Iranian prison?
You know, as you mentioned, we were in probably one of the most notorious prisons in the world. We cannot even describe by words how horrible the situation was inside prison. We were under so much physical and psychological pressures from day one. You know, we were in different detentions. We were in Bozara detention. We were inside Evin prison. There are also different detentions. We were in public ward. We were also in 209 building, which is a security building for torturing political prisoners, for interrogating them. And we have been to different places. And, you know, for example, for days, for the first 14 days in a detention center, we didn't have anything to eat or drink. We had to sleep on a floor without carpet, which was, you know, it was freezing. It was in the middle of winter. And we had only a few wet blankets covering with urine to cover ourselves. And we had to use them to keep ourselves warm. We had to suffer, you know, interrogations for 7 to 8 hours. They tried to put pressure on us to deny our faith in Jesus every time that we had interrogations during the court. And they would threaten us. They would threaten the lives of our family members. There are so many details about the 9 months that we were in prison. But you ask about the worst experience that we had inside prison. I think we both agree that it was the execution of prisoners with whom we were living every day. You know, they would take prisoners for execution the night before execution. They would put them in solitary confinement. And the day after, we would hear that they executed them by hanging. This was a horrible experience for all prisoners because we could feel the spirit of death inside prison. And all prisoners were sad for weeks after any executions. And also they executed one of our best friends, Shirin Alamhuli, who was a Kurdish and political, activist who was fighting for women's rights inside prison.
In the same situation, because you converted from Islam to Christianity, and this is forbidden in Iran, and you were, you know, talking with people in Iran about Jesus Christ, and it's also forbidden, and it's under the death penalty. And how would you feel? Did you feel with this, death in your mind that every day you can be, you can go to trial and be sentenced to death for converting to Jesus Christ?
We shared a little about our testimony, how we converted to Christianity. We both tasted the love of God. We experienced His love. We saw many miracles. That's why, you know, that was very important for us. It was the foundation of our faith. Our personal relationship with Jesus was the foundation of our faith. Before we get arrested, you know, we decided to distribute Bibles in Tehran. We distributed 20,000 New Testaments in Tehran and different parts of the country for 3 years. And God really protected us during the time that we were distributing those Bibles. And we had two house churches, one among prostitutes, the other one among young people. And whenever we went outside, you know, doing our chores, we were talking to Iranian people and handing a Bible to them as a gift, because Iranian people are very open. As I mentioned, they are tired of this regime and the Islamic rules. And we didn't have any bad experience talking to Iranian people about Jesus. But because of, you know, these activities, some people had reported about us and they arrested us. They put us in prison, as you mentioned, for 9 months. And our charge was apostasy, which is punishable by death. And most of the time during our interrogations and in all of the courts, they try to threaten us. They told us that if you want to insist in your faith, in Jesus, we would face execution by hanging. Our sentence was execution. And they threatened our lives all the time. They threatened the lives of our family members. And we were tortured, not physically, but psychologically, because we didn't have, you know, food to eat for the first few days that we got arrested. We were under so much pressures. We saw many injustices. But we both believe, you know, our faith in Jesus, our personal relationship with him, kept us, you know, to stand on our faith. And we couldn't deny him. We both believe that, you know, that was an honor for us to at least suffer a little for our faith. And when we compare our sufferings to what Jesus did for us on the cross, we believe, you know, our suffering was nothing. And that's why, you know, our faith and as I mentioned, the Holy Spirit really helped us during the time we were in prison. For 9 months, we didn't have access to Bible. They didn't allow us to read Bible, to have a Bible. But God would remind us the verses in Bible during, you know, different situation. For instance, for the first few months, prisoners, you know, some of prisoners were Muslims, prejudiced Muslims. And as you mentioned, they believe that if you convert from Islam to any other religion, you are infidel and dirty. And they would call us dirty Christians for months. But we try to show them who Jesus is, what his teachings are, by our behaviors, by loving them, by respecting them, by praying for them. And as a result of, you know, our behavior and, you know, the miracles that would happening among prisoners, they could see there is a truth in our faith. And they started coming to us and asking questions about Jesus. And it was very interesting that, you know, all of them that would, you know, insult us during the first few months, they came to us and they apologized and they told us that we can see as soon as you pray, a miracle happen. But we are praying namaz every day. We are practicing Islam, but nothing happened. And also it was very interesting. And even some guards came to us and they apologized at the end, you know, because of their behaviors, because they could see the miracles. They could hear from prisoners that miracles were happening among prisoners. That's why it was very, God really strengthened our faith during the time you know, we were in prison. And he would remind us, you know, the verses in Bible. For instance, one of the verses, it's in Matthew, it says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. It is very easy to read that verse, but practicing that verse is not easy. And we believe that, you know, Holy Spirit really strengthened us and God gave us the power to love those who were insulting us during the time we were in prison.
When you was talking about dealing out the Bible, the New Testaments, it was very similar in Poland, because we are sending the New Testaments for free. And I think that the number is the similar, thousands of this, but you were just two, and it was forbidden under the death penalty, and it's very, very brave for you. I I was praying for you till this day, and it's very, very encouraging for us in Poland also. And I want to ask you about your faith, because when I was reading your book, you wrote that in prison, the Islamic guards and persecutors tried to force you to compromise Christianity and Islam. They said that Jesus is also an Islamic prophet, so you can believe in this prophet. It's okay. And what do you think about this popular mixing Christianity and Islam? For example, when Pope Francis said that we need to enter the brotherhood arc with the Muslims and we believe in the same God, how would you respond to people who say things like this?
You know, we both believe this is not true. You know, when we moved to the United States, it was very interesting that many Americans, you know, told us that Islam is religion of peace. And we were shocked by hearing that. And we mentioned to them, have you ever read Quran? Even by reading Quran, you can see there are many verses that shows how cruel Islam is that. You know, there are many verses that says that if anyone convert from Islam to any other religion, they are infidel and dirty, and there's, you know, they have to be killed. There are many verses against women, you know, in Quran. That's why it was very shocking for us. And also about Jesus, as you mentioned, it's very interesting. They try to show that Jesus in Quran is the same as Jesus in Bible, which is not true. And it was the last court, one court before the last court that our lawyer and also the judge tried to convince us that your belief is the same as our belief. The way that you believe in Jesus is the same as, you know, Jesus in Quran. And it was in that court that I, you know, told the judge and also my lawyer that our faith is not the same. We do not, you know, believe in Jesus the same as, you know, you believe in Jesus in Quran, because in Quran, they believe Jesus was a prophet, but we believe Jesus was the Son of God. He was the God. That's why it's totally different. And they try to deceive people by, you know, compromise between these religions in order to show that all religion are the same. And I believe, you know, politicians use this compromise because of the politics, because of their own interests. But the reality is different. The truth is different. Jesus is the only way. He is the truth, and it's completely different from teaching of, you know, Islam, how they teach about Jesus.
And also I wanted, you know, to add that we always make a distinction between people and their religion, because there are so many Muslims like us. You know, we were growing up in an Islamic country, and we were forced to practice Islam like majority of Iranians. They are just born as a Muslim and they don't believe in Islam. Most of them don't even read the Quran, but they are forced to follow Islam. And some of them, you know, just follow Islam blindly, and they don't know the truth because there's no other way for them to learn about other religions or about the truth. That's why we always say that, you know, we don't have problem with people, not even with Muslims, because we came from the same background and we met Jesus, we found the truth. And this is happening to many Iranians who were born to a Muslim family. They find the truth, they meet with Jesus, and they come to that, you know, understanding of the truth themselves. But we think that we need to love people, and we need to send the message of Christianity to them, send the message of salvation to them. But we believe that the root of Islam is satanic, you know. If you read the Quran, because the problem is majority of people don't read the Quran. If they read the Quran, they can see the difference clearly. They don't need to listen to the Pope or other religious figures. They can make that distinction themselves, you know, just by reading the two books, the Bible and the Quran. They can see the difference, and they can see that things that are mentioned in the Quran cannot be the truth and cannot come from God. because, you know, as Marzin mentioned, in the Quran, it says that everyone who believes in other religions except Islam are infidel, and it is the responsibility of Muslims to kill those who are infidels. But we believe that we always need to love people and to send a message of salvation to them.
Yes, and this this moment of the trial you mentioned, it was, in my opinion, the most moving moment in your book, when you reject to deny Christ, and it was everything under the pressure of the death penalty, and it's I was crying reading this part of the book, and I want to ask you, how did you come out from prison? Because you mentioned that the international interest and pressure was very, very important. We also emphasized this international pressure on, for example, Communist China, who persecutes Christians. We were talking with Pastor Bob Fu, who flew from Communist China to United States, like you, after he was persecuted by Communist China. And could you tell the people in Europe and in Poland how this international pressure was important in your case?
You know, for the first few months, we didn't have any connection with the world outside. For 6 months, we were not allowed to have a lawyer. And we thought that we completely forgotten by the world outside. But after a few months, when we were allowed to call our family members, we realized that many people, many Christians are praying for us, supporting us. That was so encouraging. It really encouraged our faith. It encouraged us to stand on our faith. And we realized that we are not alone. Instead, we have a big Christian family that are supporting us and standing with us in this battle. We believe that the main reason that today we are free, we are alive, is because of God's grace and His power, His miracles. But the second reason, as you mentioned, we believe because of, you know, Christian supports, politician supports, international supports that lead us to freedom. The Iranian government were under so much pressure by some international organizations such as Amnesty International, the UN, the United Nations, and many Christian organizations, and also Pope from Vatican sent a letter to the government and asked for our release. I remember it was the last month that we were in prison, one high official came to prison to see us, and he mentioned that. He told us why Pope from Vatican sent a letter on behalf of you to the government. And we told him that we don't know. We are in prison and we don't know what is going on outside the prison, because you arrested us, you put us in prison, and Christians all around the world are protesting against what you are doing. And it was very interesting, and it was very encouraging for both of us that many people and politicians, international organizations started advocating for us and, you know, fighting for our case. And as a result of all these international pressures, the Iranian government had to release us, unlike their desire. We believe because of the politics, they wanted to show that there is religious freedom in Iran. We won't kill people because of their faith, which is not true. Our, you know, sentence was, our charge was apostasy, which is punishable by death. And if it wasn't that international pressure, international community support, they would definitely execute us. And we are very thankful that, you know, many people supported us. And we always, you know, encourage people to talk to politicians and to put pressure on, you know, countries like Iran that and other countries who arrest people, who persecute people because of their, you know, their religion. We believe everyone has to have this right to worship God in a way that they like, and no one has the right to, you know, persecute people because of their beliefs.
And now, thanks to God, you're in the USA. And how is that possible that you went to the USA, not to other country? I want to ask you, why America? Because as you wrote in your book, the Iranian kids are taught in the school that America is evil, Israel is evil. And why did you escape from Iran to the USA?
Actually, I had a few dreams that God told me that you should be in the United States. That's why that was the reason that I decided to come to the United States, because I received his message. We had some, you know, talk with some of our friends, and the ministry that we were working, they insisted us to come to go to the UK. But since I had these dreams, I became sure that, you know, God's will is for us to come to the United States, and we believe God had a purpose to send us here.
And what was your first impressions after landing in the USA, and your first thoughts about America?
You know, you mentioned about our feelings that, you know, in Iran they try to brainwash people that the USA is a great Satan. And I remember when we were very young, before going to our classes, we had to stand in lines and say things like death to America, death to Israel, without knowing, you know, where America was. But we were forced to say these things. But these kind of, you know, propaganda don't work anymore. And people in Iran are coming to an understanding that, you know, these are lies from the regime. And as you can see in the recent protests as well, they try to say in their slogans that our enemy is not the United States, our enemy is right here, meaning that our enemy is the Iranian regime. So people, you know, are educated now. They came to this understanding that their enemy is inside Iran, the Iranian regime and the authorities. And when we moved to the U.S., we knew that, you know, we had many friends in the U.S., we had many Christians, many believers who stood with us when we were in prison, and most of them were in the U.S. Many Christians wrote to us when we were in prison, and they prayed for us. They started advocating for our case. And we were, you know, we knew that it was God's will for us to come to the U.S. But about Christianity, it was interesting, you know, at the beginning when we moved to the U.S., we thought, you know, we are coming to a Christian country. Everyone is Christian. But very soon we realized that, you know, it's like our country, Iran, that people are born as Muslim, majority of them, but they don't know Islam. We realized that it's the same in the U.S. You know, many people are born as Christians, but there are people who don't know Jesus Christ and who don't have personal relationship with Jesus Christ. There are many, many churches in the U.S. You know, people go to churches on Sundays. And some don't, you know, refuse, they don't go, especially younger generation, because they haven't experienced the personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And what we felt, you know, through our experiences going to churches and sharing our personal stories was that, you know, people in the U.S. and probably in other countries, because we traveled to some European countries as well, need, you know, experiencing the love of Jesus themselves. They need to experience having personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And that's the only thing that can keep us to stand on our faith when we face difficulties, when we face persecution. And one problem that I think people are rejecting Christianity and they are not, you know, responding to the message of Jesus is that they look at people, they look at, you know, even pastors or religious figures, and they become frustrated when they see their weaknesses and when they see that they don't keep their own promises. That's why we believe that it's very important to look into Jesus and to just walk with Jesus and don't rely on people. We need to have that strong relationship with Jesus Christ.
When you are talking about this, and when I was reading your book, and you write that that when you're a Muslim, when you believe in Islam, it didn't make you closer to God. And unfortunately, in Poland, is the situation when young people don't believe in God and reject God and Catholicism because it doesn't give them the personal relation with Jesus. And in Poland is the biggest gap between young people and the parents regarding the faith in God. So what would you say to these young Poles who rejected God because they rejected Catholicism? And how would you encourage young Poles to turn to Christ personally without intercessors?
You know, as Mariam explained, when you just follow the religious rules, when you follow people, after a while, you know, you became exhausted, you became tired, because there is no truth in just following the rules. If you don't have a personal relationship with Jesus, if you don't try to get to know Jesus, if you don't have the thirst in you, in your heart, to have a relationship with God, to communicate with Him, to find the truth, so God won't force you to do anything. Jesus says, if you open your heart, I will come and in your heart. So it depends on us. If the youth in Poland, you know, don't open their hearts, don't try to find the truth, don't want to know God, they won't, you know, they won't find the truth. So the main point is that, you know, to have this thirst in your heart and to be interested to find the truth. As Mariam explained, when you follow just people and, you know, the Islamic rules in Iran, people were following the Islamic rules, which is nonsense. And that's why, you know, they get tired of the Islamic rules and they don't even go read Quran. We believe if they read Quran, they will find the true Quran as well. We encourage, you know, Polish people to start, you know, instead of just following religious rules, start to experience Jesus himself, to start talking to God as their father and try to have a personal relationship with God.
And, you know, I just want to add that I think we both can understand the frustration of especially younger generation. But we would like to encourage them, you know, not to allow the mistakes of churches or religious authorities or even religious rules discourage them from having that, you know, beautiful relationship with Jesus Christ, because it's very different, you know, following traditions and religions is very different from having a relationship with God.
And if you have time, the last questions about your new book, because I was heard that you want to write a new book about women in Iran. And it's very interesting for us because in Europe, Islam is more and more popular, unfortunately, because of the huge Islamic immigration. And women don't know much about Islam, what it really is. And how would you prove or describe that Islam is dangerous, especially for women?
You know, when we were in prison, even before prison, we had house churches. One of them was for prostitutes. And, you know, the teachings in Iran encourage temporary marriage. They call it sigha in Iran. And this is based on the Quran, because the prophet of Islam, Muhammad, had four wives, four legal wives, and several temporary marriages. And they, in Iran, Muslims and the Iranian regime tries to spread this teaching that women can have temporary marriage for their own pleasures and also for their own benefits, because they get money from people to sign a contract, to write a contract for them between a man and a woman, to you know, for them to be married. Sometimes this temporary marriage can be for a few hours, it can be for a few weeks or a few months. This is just one example of how Islam views women. That's why we had a house church for prostitutes, to teach them, you know, that this is wrong, and the teachings of Islam is destroying their lives, because most of them believe that, you know, by having temporary marriage, they were acting according to the verses in the Quran, and what they were doing was not sin. That's why we felt responsible to teach them that this is wrong. And again, in prison, we witnessed how Islam and the teachings of Islam destroyed lives of many women. In the detention center we were, there were so many prostitutes coming to prison. Some of them were forced even to have temporary marriage with judges so that they would be free from prison. They, for example, some of them would go to court and come back, and they were happy. They would tell us that we will be free. And when we asked them how, they would say that, you know, they agreed to temporary marriage with a judge. This is just one example, or there are several other examples. For example, the violence against women, like the right that Islam gives to husbands to beat their wives, to teach them by beating. You know, these are examples that shows how Islam, degrade women's rights and treat women as second-class citizens. There are several teachings in Islam and in the Quran that treats women as says that women are not as equal as men. And when it comes to custody of children, when it comes to heritage, in whatever right that they should have, they are half of men. That's why we had this passion in our heart to work among women. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, we couldn't finish working on the second book about women in Iran and especially in Islam, because since we moved to the U.S., we were so busy with, just advocating for religious persecution, religious minorities who are under persecution, and also for people who are experiencing, violations in other ways in Iran.
But, praise God, if you look at the demonstrations and protests these days, you can see the main leaders are women. Women are more courageous than men, because as Mariam explained, they can see that how Islam destroyed their lives, how Islam took their rights and, damaged, their character, their, their life. And as Mariam mentioned, we saw many women in prison that the Islamic rules destroyed their lives, and they end up to prison. And we are very glad that, these days, people, God is opening the eyes of people, especially women. And women are, the game changer in Iran, and they are going to, to end this regime. We believe that, women are more courageous these days because of, these Islamic rules, because the Islamic rules suppressed them for over 40 years.
Thank you so much for the interview. It was so moving and encouraging for us. And we are praying for free Iran, and we are praying for your spiritual service and also your work for human rights. Thank you so much. It was Mariam Rostampour and Marcia Amirizadeh, Christians from Iran, now based in the USA.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thank you so much. God bless you. And it was Gains the Tide TV from Poland. Eunika Hojecka. See you soon.